Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Following the Ferguson turmoil, the Catholic Church in St. Louis is ramping up its commitment to human rights. We'll be talking with the woman leading a revive effort a little bit later. But first, a man who has been a prominent part of the St. Louis narrative for some 40 years. Vince Schemel is a former alderman, former mayor, who for the past 13 years has been guiding Midtown redevelopment as chief executive officer of Grand Center. He announced recently that he's stepping down as soon as a successor can be found, but that may take a little while. Vince Schemel joins me in studio. Vince, nice to see you again.
Don, good to see you.
You know, I had Phyllis Young on the program the other day, and I started the interview with her by saying we've gone full cycle. I remember when she first ran for the board, and we go back a few years, don't we?
Yeah, sure. Yes, indeed.
Well, is the battery winding down? What's going on with
Well, I think this is a perfect time for a transition in the leadership at Grand Center. We started about 4.5 years ago a master planning process for the district that led to a very comprehensive, what I will call commonly shared vision of what the future of Grand Center looks like physically and organizationally. And, it's going to be about an $80 million capital campaign to redo the streetscape, to make this a much more pedestrian-welcoming neighborhood. And so that's going to be a 7 to 10 year project, and I'm not going to be here for 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that about a month or so ago, we started construction on the Missouri Theater building, and that's the final vacant historic building in the original Midtown Historic District. So you're going to see, in fact, starting this summer, a couple of parking garages and some new residential going up on some of the parking lots. We've got almost 40 acres of parking lots and vacant land in the district. And, you know, rehabbing vacant buildings that use a whole series of different mix of tax credits and whatnot, that's a very different type of development activity than building on vacant land. And so both from a physical development and from a planning implementation standpoint, I think it's just time for new leadership.
Where is this money going to come from?
Well, we have a variety of sources. We have a couple of applications in at East West Gateway, some money that would come through MoDOT. Probably the closest corollary to what we're going to have to do here is be like Forest Park Forever, that we're going to have to get private funding, we're going to have to get public funding, and it'll have to be matched accordingly. And, you know, I've identified we're going to need probably $35 to $45 million of public money, and I've identified about $75 million that is potentially available over the next 7 years or so. And it's just going to take a lot of consistent work on the part of Grand Center and the CEO to see to it that that's matched with private money, because the public dollars are going to follow private investment.
It's going to take some salesmanship.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you're a pretty good salesman. I remember the days when you were the sizzle and Gene McNary was the steak.
It's a long time back.
A long time ago. Yeah. Anyway, when you look back over these 13 years, what do you see? There's so much that's gone on. You brought some material with you. No time for me to read it all, though I'm familiar with much of it. Mm-hmm. What do you see when you look back?
Well, I think there's a cohesion to the Grand Center brand now. By the way, not in small part due to the fact that every 15 minutes you guys say broadcasting live from Umsla mm-hmm. Grand Center, so thank you. But there's a growing sense that what we have here is a collective neighborhood and a arts and cultural district. And as we were talking before we came on the air, you know, the sense of district got lost in the 50s, 60s, 70s, that people just, they didn't understand the value of a district. But the very fact that St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon were able to merge and really, I think, take one and one and turn it into four, you were able to do that because you're right here in close juxtaposition to one another. And, of course, the Beacon got started across the public media commons from where we're seated with the Nine Network, sort of giving them some space to get started. And then, about 4 years ago, the Symphony – put a presentation of Circus Flora on the stage at Powell Symphony Hall. The Nine Network heard about that, went over and did a one-hour special on it. They sold out four or five shows, so it helped the symphony quite a bit. But the big payoff was that about 6 weeks later, the ticket sales for the Circus Flora opened up, and their first-day sales went up 80% from the previous year because they had been exposed to an entirely different audience through the symphony. And I guess those are the sort of things that you create collaborations and create opportunities for organizations that just wouldn't exist were they not in this confined and what I will say conversational district.
What were the early impetus for redeveloping Grand Center? I mean, it was languished for so long.
Well, it was really in a very desperate strait. This all started with Father Reinhardt at St. Louis University. Mm-hmm. Bear with me. 1964, mm-hmm. Father Reinhardt gives a speech at the University of Chicago talking about the role of urban universities and how they can serve as the generator or regenerator of cities. 1970, along with the Danforth Foundation, they get some funding to carry on some planning during the 60s, and the city creates Newtown in town, 1,100 acres. Out of that comes three redevelopment corporations, the St. Louis University Medical Campus redevelopment, Lafayette Town down at 44 and Jefferson, and City Center Redevelopment, which was the forerunner to Grand Center, Inc. That happened in 1980, and Leon Strauss was sort of father's consigliere on how to do this, mm-hmm. and in 82 he opens, he and Mary Strauss open the Fox. And then along comes the 1986 Tax Act, which takes away all the historic tax credits from the federal government. So Leon comes down to see me. I was in the mayor's office from 81 to 93. And he said, we're going to have to set up a not-for-profit. Thus was born Grand Center, Inc. And he said, you know, we're not going to be able to do this unless we can get some private dollars. And it kind of languished along until Richard Gaddis came in as the president, and mm-hmm. Richard put some fundraising effort into it. Then he went off to run the Santa Fe Opera. Then Ann Ruich came in, and Ann gets so little credit for what's happened here because she was here and got everything sort of organized but was gone by the time it was built. But she organized the financing for the Continental Life Building. She recruited Cardinal Ritter. She just did a number of really, really difficult projects that changed the face here. And I look at it and I think the biggest thing that's happened is that we've created momentum that I think can safely be handed off to the next leader here.
You didn't mention Larry Biondi, Father Biondi, and he certainly had to have a key role in this area.
Yeah, and certainly we wrote an official history of Grand Center about mm-hmm. 3 years ago, and Larry is prominent in there. Mm-hmm. What he did was he defined St. Louis University. He created a definition of its location, its proximity to Grand Center, created a real foothold at Lindell so that, Grand Center had some definition as a result. When he defined the SLU campus, he also defined the Grand Center boundaries, and that gave us an ability to have a different conversation with the neighborhood.
Assuming that the money can be raised to continue the development projects, what is ahead? I mean, what do you see as the main thrust?
Here is the main thrust has got to be to get this neighborhood to be walkable, to be pedestrian and bike friendly, to make it candidly more like the Central West End or the Loop than it is right now. The quality of the artistic offer that has to go on inside Powell Hall has to be infinitely better than if it were in a neighborhood where people wanted to come to anyway. I say to people all the time, if I could take Powell Hall and put it on the north side of Maryland Plaza, where those houses are across the street from the Chase, they'd sell 25% more tickets. I mean, it would do wonders for – well, you can't take Powell Hall to Maryland Plaza, but you can replicate a streetscape and an urban design and a pedestrian-embracing environment that will make people want to come here, and it will help every one of the 40-plus not-for-profit organizations that are now located here fulfill their missions.
Is there a dollar figure that can be put on the value of Grand Center as it develops in terms of the kind of revenue that it can generate?
Oh, certainly. From a revenue generation standpoint, we've had for the last 12 years a tax increment finance district in place, and we track that every year because we have to pay those bonds. And property taxes, as of about a year ago, in the last 11 years, had gone up about 240%. Mm-hmm. And the economic activities had, taxes had gone up about 65%, and that was during a pretty rough recession. So as we come out of this recession, I think we've got a pretty bright future. The non-economic impact, what's the value of, having all of the artistic and cultural offer that we have here? It's just I'm reminded of one of the things that you remember Don Lasseter of Grand Mercantile Bank?
Sure.
Gene McNary and I were meeting with him one time, and we were talking about Metrolink, and Gene was against it, and I was for it, and Don was running Civic Progress, and he was for it. And Gene said, "Why are you for it? You're a conservative Republican banker." And Don said, "Because big cities have them, and little insignificant cities don't." Mm-hmm. And so that's how I look at Grand Center. I mean, it's just something you have to have if you're going to be a first-tier city.
One of the things that people tend to forget, if they realized it at all, we had Jill McGuire on the program recently talking about how much the arts community contributes dollars and cents-wise mm-hmm. to this city. It's enormous. It's in tens of millions of dollars.
On a cultural or on a per capita basis, the cultural investment of St. Louisans in this city is just – it's staggering. I mean, I've never compared it to other cities, but you look at the Zoo Museum District, you look at what we're doing at the Regional Arts Commission, the Missouri Arts Council, the hundreds of millions of dollars that are being donated to do City Arch River, which is really a cultural investment, an investment mm-hmm. in the infrastructure of our community. I would put St. Louis up against any community in the country in terms of our per capita investment. It's staggering.
You know, I have to ask this in terms of the money that you want to raise and the money that's necessary. And it's something we've been talking about a lot recently and you've been thinking about, I'm sure, and that is city image has taken some pretty significant hits in the last couple of months. How is this going to impact or will it impact what you need to do to raise money to accomplish the objectives you've set?
I think there are two ways to – there's two separate answers. Let me give them both. One is the money that we're going to raise is going to be internal money, and I think the folks, the private donors that we're going to be going to for the private money, I think they're going to be motivated to invest in St. Louis more than they have been in the past. I mean, everybody – I think realizes we've taken a big knock nationally. And so I don't think it's going to slow down the private fundraising in St. Louis at all. And the second side of that is how do we reposition this so that it becomes a positive? How do we take this and turn it around so that St. Louis becomes the center of learning about race relations for the next decade? And there is some work going on. I'm not directly involved in it, but I'm aware of it. There is some work going on to begin to think about how St. Louis becomes the place that demonstrates to the rest of the country on a consistent basis, here's what you do to deal with income disparities, racial segregation, education disparities, police-community relations, all of the things that are necessary to create an equitable society. I think that's a challenge, and if we can find the platform for this community to take that on, I think we could, a decade from now, become the center of post-racial America.
I wonder if we're up to that, given the city's history and the polarization that has existed here for so long.
I think we're up to anything we make our mind up to do.
I have to ask you a question that you probably didn't expect, but it's relative, I think, to city image, and that's the Rams. It's deja vu all over again for some of us, and certainly for you. What do you think about what's going on and how that might be ultimately worked out?
Well, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that I engineered the financing and construction of the Edward Jones Dome. I'm more proud of the fact that I didn't sign that lease. Mm-hmm. Bob Baer, a dear friend of mine, was in the Business Journal last week saying, you know, probably should have never had that, you know, clause in there about the state of the art. But it's there, and so now we have to deal with it. Here's my view. This is Vince Shamel's view, not Grand Center's view, nothing else.
That's the one we're looking for.
This building needs to be built in Illinois. We are never going to recapture downtown or reestablish downtown as the center of this region until we create a impetus to rebuild the Illinois side of the river. There hasn't been a major office building built in downtown St. Louis in probably 25 years. Millions of square feet have been built out west. If we keep going the way we're going, downtown St. Louis 50, 100 years from now is going to be on the Missouri River. It's not going to be at downtown St. Louis with the Arch. And so we have got to figure out how we include Illinois in the St. Louis region. If you want people to be on the team, you got to give them a jersey. And you've got to give them some large economic driver. And I think that stadium, especially the way it's designed with a capacity to handle a soccer team, I think that could be a great economic driver for Illinois and for the east side of the region and starts to begin to balance this out.
Do we need a stadium at all?
I think, look, I've been to maybe two Rams games in my life, okay? I'm not particularly a sports fan, but it's sort of like what Don Lasseter said, big cities have them and little insignificant cities don't. And so you just got to invest in these things, but you got to do it strategically. Continuing to pour public money into downtown as an isolated piece of the eastern edge of the region, in my view, is not as strategic as we could be.
But do we do it with a gun to our head?
Well, look. You know, the fact that this is going to be a dual facility, you're going to get either an NFL team or you're going to get a soccer team or you may get both. But I don't think you stop investing. I think you have to continue to invest. But I really cannot overstate how important it is that we include Metro East in the development of the future of this region. Our downtown St. Louis is never going to be successful again.
You know, I can see that even as you're talking about it, how passionate you are about this. I mean, your intensity level has gone up a notch or two just talking about that.
Yeah, I have thought about this a lot, and I am an absolute regionalist, and I'll tell you what convinced me. When I was in the mayor's office, I followed two cities intently, Boston and San Francisco. My view of the world is there are three tier one cities. There's New York, there's Chicago, and L.A., and they each have lifestyle-driven echo cities. It's Boston, San Francisco, and St. Louis. But, you know, you go back to 1950 in the census, we were all pretty much the same density. Well, San Francisco and Boston are back to their 1950 census densities. And St. Louis is, you know, we're down, you know, I don't know, 343 or whatever. But here's the catch. We are still all three cities, Boston, St. Louis, and San Francisco, we are each still 13% of our regional population. What's happened is that their regions have quadrupled. In our region over the last decade grew about 4.3% in population, and we grew 43% in urbanized footprint. We can't afford to do this. This is like a 43% tax increase. Just can't continue.
which, again, points the finger at projects like Grand Center, and we can probably think of some others not too far from here,
right,
to the importance of them in doing exactly what you're talking about.
Reeling people back in, bringing people back to the center, bringing people back to the middle, absolutely essential to the long-term future of this region.
What's ahead for Vin Shamel? I overheard you saying earlier that you probably thought it'd be a couple of months before a successor is found for you at the Grand Center, Inc. What's ahead for you?
Well, I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter who's and she is wonderful, and I love spending time with her. And I'm on the board of 4 not-for-profits. I'm chairman of the St. Louis Language Immersion Charter Schools. Mm. So, I mean, I've got plenty to keep me busy, and if I get bored, I'm sure Lois will find something for me to do.
Well, what about this whole idea of closer ties with Metro East? Is that something you could get your hooks into?
I think that's a conversation for people of let's just say higher pay grade than me. I'm kind of long in the tooth for that kind of assignment.
But you're not going away. You're not pulling the cover over your covers over you.
Oh no.
That's Vin Shamel. Vince, thanks so much for being with us. I know your time is limited. Appreciate having this time to chat with you, and I hope we get to do it again soon.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
And keep up the good work for as long as you're keeping up. Thanks. Vince Shamel planning to leave his job in the not-too-distant future. We'll come back in a moment with a woman starting a new chapter in her career. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.